Hey there, thanks for coming. Take a seat.
It's time to retire to the drawing room.
So think about the items you accumulate over a lifetime. There's letters, photos, slides, hankies. A new museum, the Foundling Archive, thinks they all have a story to tell. The archive is a collection of orphaned artefacts whose value has been lost to their rightful owners. Katrina Lolli-Cato is the program's coordinator. She joins me along with Dr. Daniela Trimboli, who's a doctor at the Research Unit of Public Cultures at Melbourne University, looking at digital storytelling and everyday multiculturalism. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk first about the archive of yours. What's in this archive?
Sure. So essentially, Patricia, it's the stuff you have on your mantelpiece. It's the things you have that you accumulate throughout your life. So it could be your passports, it could be death and birth certificates, it's letters, postcards. We have a huge collection of family home movies and holiday pics and all just everyday experiences. We document it without even consciously thinking about it in our everyday experience. So
we do collect them, but some people abandon them. In fact, some people may face pressure in their own households to get rid of them.
Absolutely.
In the effort to cull, which clearly is wrong. What can you learn through these objects?
So at the Foundling Archive, what we're really trying to do is we're trying to persuade people to extend this idea of sharing your story to the point where you can see that these objects, they place you in society through time, in history, and on, you know, in our case, the Australian landscape, and they enable you to ground yourself in where you're at and position yourself so that you're better equipped to have empathy for other people when you hear these stories online or on the television, the 6 o'clock news and that kind of thing. So by you not just conserving the objects, but the context behind those objects, you can create like a bank of experience that you don't necessarily think about or work through just in your everyday life. And that bank really enables you to position yourself better, to broaden your scope of what community is, you know?
But this isn't just a personal bank, you're making it a collective bank.
Absolutely.
Why would anyone, I'll give you a scenario, be interested in any of my postcards or letters?
We're not asking anybody to be interested in your postcards or letters. We're asking you to be interested in your postcards and letters. And we're asking you to create the same kind of value for maybe heritage that you might see when you see a nice building out in the street or when you see a Greek vase or a painting in a museum or a gallery. We're asking you to say, well, these objects, any of those objects, have a value because we've given them a value. And if we give these objects of our own everyday experience and of our ancestors the same reverence, we're able to use them as communication. We're able to use them as those mechanisms for placing yourself through time and space.
Danielle, I want to bring you in here because you're really concerned about the intersection between multiculturalism and storytelling. Mm-hmm. Australia's social history is very much one of immigration. Can these stories be found in keepsakes and letters and items that have been discarded?
Definitely. I think one of the really exciting things about the project that Katrina and Gracie are running is that it enables for different kinds of complexities to come through the immigration story that we sort of adopt through growing up and what we get told in school. And Katrina sort of pointed to already, there are certain things that we ascribe value to, and that comes associated with a kind of dominant narrative almost. And so these more everyday things, I think, enable us to sort of see the complexities and differences that people actually experience in their day-to-day lives that we wouldn't normally get an insight into.
There's a narrative that we tell ourselves as Australians about our history. Do projects like this and I suppose other digital archives you've looked at disrupt or challenge some of the sort of dominant stories that we tell?
There's a bit of both, obviously, going on. Definitely in my PhD research, I found a lot of archival work, especially in the digital realm at the start. And when I say start, I mean it's obviously quite new, this sort of digital storytelling platform. Very mediated, very linear kind of narrative around successful migration. Migrants came here, they integrated, they lived a happy life, that kind of story. And then more and more recently, seeing digital interventions that are showing the tensions and the nuances and actually how non-linear that migration narrative is. It's not you settle and you live a happy life. It's actually back and forth kind of memories as well and reconnections, new connections with other migrants and within your community here. So, yeah, there's definitely a bit of both going on.
Katrina, do you have a favourite piece in the archive, something you're really fond of that you think best tells the story about?
It's always the thing you're working on, you know. We've got a few collections in the archive that really demonstrate the breadth of what you collect throughout your life. So those people who obviously weren't told to chuck it out every 10 years. One that I can think of off the top of my head is this Colonel Turner is his name, George Argo Turner. And you have three generations of George Argo Turners in this collection. And they were all a military family and they all experienced war in very different ways. So one fought on the Western Front, was very much a hero, recipient of the Victory Medal. George Argo, the middle, George Argo.
Yeah, let's call him the middle.
Junior, George Argo the second. He experienced great trauma through his experience in the Second World War. So we have letters from his pregnant wife after his return where she's encouraging him and really speaking to the fallback of what war in the everyday experience when you're related to it, when it impacts you on a personal level, you know. So we have letters of correspondence through there where we can see that different experience. And then we have his son who was in the Vietnam War. And we really see that the difference through time. So not only do we see the difference in mediums of actually documenting their lives, but we also see the media clippings. We see, as I said, letters and, you know, training schedules from Pakapuni and all these amazing documents that they would have just thrown in a drawer and not thought of. And somebody's obviously not thought of twice because they've given it to us. But it really situates his family over nearly a century in Australian society. And not just on that fun celebratory level, but politically, you know. So it's probably my favourite. Tells us a lot.
You're in the drawing room and my two guests are Katrina Lolli-Cato. She's the program coordinator at the Foundling Archive, recently opened in Melbourne's north. And Dr. Daniela Trimboli is from the Research Unit of Public Cultures at Melbourne University. And she's looking at digital storytelling. Back to the archive, Katrina, where do these things, where do they come from? How do you actually get them?
So initially, it was more of a personal interest that my sister Gracie and I had. We are collectors of all things sentimental and nostalgic, I think, in general, and we've really tried to develop that through the archive. But it came from a personal, I guess, emotional attachment to seeing objects in shops and on eBay that I thought, you can't get rid of this. Surely it must have a meaning somewhere. And I'm glad we started like that because as our research developed and as we developed this idea, we could see that there were social benefits and measurable benefits to what these home archives can really do and say. So beyond that, we've started, I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but we've started acquiring collections through people coming in contact with us, and they no longer see the relevance in what they've acquired through, you know, somebody's passing or moving into a house and finding a stash under the floorboards or wherever.
But they feel like it might have value for historical purposes?
That's interesting. Well, we're not sure. I think that there's somewhere they see that they would rather not throw it in the garbage. There's, you know, there's that thing of I'm not sure if I can throw it out, but I don't know how I'm going to use this. I don't know how this can find purpose in my life. And we always make it really clear that if somebody comes along in the future, we really do want them to have it back.
Daniela, you explore, as we said, multiculturalism through this digital space. Multiculturalism has been long explored in Australia. Museums have been doing it. I think that there has been actually a platform for that exploration. How does the digital space change our interactions with understanding Australia's multicultural past or its contemporary multicultural stories as well?
Well, I think connecting to what I said before, it just enables new kinds of stories to be heard, really. I mean, because some of my research looked at quite curated digital platforms of stories. And again, similar kind of narrative around multiculturalism that often gets portrayed in museums and other kind of collections. But when you start looking at the way that the, you know, other people taking on digital forms and creating their own kinds of stories, really interesting things start to happen because you pick up on all these other things that you didn't hear about before. And also it allows for new kinds of connections as well, because it's not, you know, people find this space where they can relate to something that someone else has shared. And it just kind of allows, you know, interestingly, it's obviously online, but it allows for a different kind of mediation that's not often seen through these kind of bigger institutions.
Katrina, have you always collected things? Stuff?
Stuff, I have. And I think mostly because I come from a diasporic background, when you don't have a long-standing history of being on say, the Australian landscape, when your family has come from somewhere else.
Where is your family from?
Italy, mostly. But what happens is they bring these trinkets with them, or, you know, in the age of pre-digital age, where people were sending things through mail, the photographs and the letters that you got were so precious. So I think I've always felt a sense of reverence or respect, I guess, or authority for those trinkets and other bits of paper and photography, because they were always discussed with me as something that represented something greater than the bit of paper they were written on, you know?
And now our experiences of being migrants or the next generation after the migrants are so different in terms of that connection with the homeland. I mean, I'm sure this is where the digital space is really interesting. Now new migrants to Australia, or even people like me who are the child of migrants, connect to people in their homeland.
Definitely.
Immediately on Facebook.
Definitely.
And there is a sharing of intercultural experiences every day.
That's right. So that time and space, you know, those time and space divides that, you know, made those objects so precious, you know, we don't have that. We can connect immediately, like you say. We place different meanings now on those kinds of objects and those interactions as well.
Well, every day I feel like I'm on a Greek island now, as
yeah.
my cousins gallivant
Lucky
and
you.
Upload their pictures of where they live. Daniella, do you keep stuff?
I don't really, to be honest. I do keep a few things, but I move around a lot, actually. So I'm frequently having to do big clean out. Yeah, pack ups. And so, but I mean, saying that, I know I definitely have a couple of boxes of things at my dad's house. You know, I think he'd love me to, you know, attend to those boxes.
Yes, they ask for that eventually.
Yes, but I just sort of keep ignoring that, and I know it's there. And I'll probably get some surprises, I think, when I do open it. But I guess I do collect some things, but definitely not in a deliberate manner.
No.
And Katrina, what is it about the objects, actual things that exist outside of the digital world, which feel still more meaningful? Am I right to say that they still feel more? Is it because they're tangible? What is it?
Well, I think it's always nice to have something in your hand. But really, any object can be as precious or as useless as you make it out to be. And the idea that something has an innate meaning or value is really made up. So the most precious thing that you have could be your granddad's cap, or it could be a sugar bowl, or it could be a photograph, it could be a letter, it could be a conversation you've had with somebody once. And what I guess we try to do with those objects with the Foundling Archive is, through our projects, we remind people of their mortality, really, and of their positioning in time, and that they are a blip on the continuation of human existence. And that's something that we often come away with. Our feedback is, people are often saying, oh, you know, my grandmother has this, or, oh my God, I'm going to die one day. And I'm just like, I sit on the beach, you know, or I've saw pictures of, you know, Puffing Billy or St Kilda in your archive, and I do exactly the same thing. And they really start to see this repetition of human experience through time, you know. So that's what those objects mean. They signify your experience. Could be anything.
Could be anything. It is anything. Thank you to both of you. It's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for having us.
And that's Katrina Lolli-Cato. She's the program coordinator at the Foundling Archive, and it's recently been opened in Melbourne's north. And also Dr. Daniella Trimboli is from the Research Unit of Public Cultures at Melbourne University, looking at digital storytelling and everyday multiculturalism.